Today on Straight Talk Africa, Kenyans go to the polls August 8th. Observers say the contest between President Uhuru Kenyatta and former Kenyan Prime Minister Raila Odinga is too close to call. In 2007, the election was marred by irregularities and violence, claiming more than 1,000 people. And the last election ended up in the Supreme Court, which dismissed Odinga's petition. What does the Electoral Commission need to do this time around to deliver a free, fair, and credible result? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
Hello, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ayan Bior, your social media reporter.
I am profoundly honored and humbled to tell you that this broadcast marks the 17th anniversary of Straight Talk Africa. We thank you very much for your support and for being a part of our family. Needless to say, it continues to be a great pleasure and privilege to serve you. The first edition of Straight Talk Africa began on August 2nd, 2000. Interestingly, the theme of that broadcast was, guess what? The democratization process in Africa. And well, today, it's a discussion on next Tuesday's Kenyan presidential election.
And coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook, and Twitter comments, and we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
Opinion is divided even among pollsters on whom, between President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga, will win the election. While observers wonder whether the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission has the capacity and integrity to deliver a result that reflects the will of the Kenyan people. My colleague, Paul Sisco, has more.
Despite multiple candidates running for the presidency, the race for Kenya's highest office comes down to incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga. The latest poll suggests the voting will be close. If neither candidate wins the required 50% plus one vote, a runoff will ensue. President Uhuru Kenyatta is the son of Kenya's first president, Jomo Kenyatta. He's seeking re-election along with his running mate, Deputy President William Ruto. President Kenyatta's chief challenger is Raila Odinga of NASA, the National Super Alliance. Odinga is the son of Kenya's first vice president, Jaramogi Oginga Odinga. His running mate is Kalonzo Musyoka. One concern as the August 8th vote approaches is the possibility of violence, fearing some level of the post-election turmoil that occurred in 2007 and 8. Meanwhile, Kenya's National Police Force says it is investigating the killing of Christopher Masando. He was found dead after being tortured on Monday. Masando was head of information, communication, and technology for Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, and he had an in-depth knowledge of the technology being used in the presidential election and was about to test the system the day before he disappeared. Shortly after Masando's death, IEBC Commission Chairman Wafulu Chabukati asked the government to provide security for all IEBC employees so Kenyans can have a free and fair election.
The commission was just about to roll out a simulation exercise to confirm that our ICT department is ready to transmit results to Kenyans on the August 8th, after the August 8th general election.
International consultant Anita Reagan has recently returned from Kenya.
These are the same candidates who have been running for since independence, whether it was their father, now their sons, and it continues on like that. So there is nothing really new for them. They've been tested, each candidate has been tested, they have held certain positions in government. So these are not new players, these are the exact same players. So you can understand their anxiety of what to expect because they've already been there. People need to understand that election is a process, it's not something that is set in stone. So then they can be able to move forward in doing so many other things. So the election should not totally define who Kenyans are in this case, or Africans are, but they should define how they want to move forward. and that will be in their hands, really.
Opposition parties accuse President Kenyatta of seeking to rig the vote, while the president says his main opponent, Raila Odinga, is trying to divide the nation along ethnic lines. The former prime minister lost the hotly disputed 2007 presidential election, triggering the violence that claimed more than 1,100 Kenyan lives. There was improvement in the electoral process after the 2013 vote, due largely to the adoption of a national constitution. That close contest, won by Kenyatta, was challenged in the Supreme Court by Odinga, who later accepted the court's ruling and the results, which ended with his defeat. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Paul. To learn more about the latest election developments, I am joined by my colleague Vincent McCauley, host and managing editor of VOA's Africa 54 news program. Join us live via Skype from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Good evening, Vincent.
Good evening, Shaka.
How are you?
Well, I'm doing well in the city. It's a bit cooler than Washington.
Give us a sense, Give us a sense of the mood on the ground from your vantage point, Vincent.
Well, in a word, you can say that there is a great amount of anxiety in this country. Many are looking forward to the 8th of August with so much anxiety, not knowing what will happen thereafter. In as much as, you know, that is the case, many, of course, want to see that this day comes, they participate in the elections, and hopefully the person they support wins this vote. Of course, latest developments, especially the killing of an electoral, very critical, in fact, election official, has even added to that anxiety. Many are questioning why he was murdered at this critical time, and who had the interest to do that, and what does this mean now for the electoral body that is determined to deliver this election in a free, fair, and credible fashion.
Vincent, of course, I gather that you're talking about Chris Musando. Is that correct?
That is correct. Chris Musando was the genius of the electronic systems, the IEBC. This is the guy who was counted on to make sure that he can seal all possible loopholes and to ensure that nobody can possibly infiltrate the system to compromise the results of the August 8th elections. And his death at the exact time that he died, of course, threw everybody into confusion and just, you know, kind of dampened the spirit around the electoral commissioners. And up to today, as we speak, in as much as they're working hard to make sure the systems are working and that they can reassure Kenyans that the elections will be fair and free and that they will be transmitted in a fashion that will be acceptable to Kenyans, you can feel that they have sadness in their hearts. They're doing this job at this moment with very heavy hearts, with concerns, and in fact, with a lot of concern for what the citizens will think about the process now.
I'm sure that you have interacted with a lot of people. Are they able, for example, to sort of connect dots and wonder as to who must have had an interest in making sure that that genius that you talked about doesn't really live to do or play his part?
All that most people can say at the moment is that they believe that whoever did it had an interest in interfering with the results of this election. Now, we know that there have been calls from particularly the opposition that there has to be a guarantee that these elections will not be meddled with, that nobody will mess up with the systems. And the Electoral Commission has repeatedly said that their systems are not susceptible to compromise. Now, Chris Musando was known to have gone around the media houses to reassure people that the systems that they've put in place, the safeguards, in fact, make the system foolproof such that nobody would be able to infiltrate the system. Now, the question that has been raised is, who in this system, who in this country would want to compromise these elections? And why would he be so desperate to do so that he would go to the extent of killing the person that is seen as a man who was a major, bulwark against any such attempt? Now, nobody can really connect those dots up to this point and point a finger to anybody, but whoever did it must be a person who had inside information, who knew exactly what possibly was happening within the system. It must be another person who has information that will help him to understand that Mr. Chris Musando was doing a fabulous job and you needed to get rid of Mr. Chris Musando in order to successfully interfere with the system.
In fact, there are theories that the fact that he was tortured and that perhaps, in fact, even his arm was cut off, that perhaps that person or people, whoever killed him, may have actually been trying to get some very, very significant information and probably even trying to get a password that must have been very important for the elections.
Exactly. I mean, that is why you can kind of wonder why, if somebody just wanted to eliminate him, they did not just shoot him or just hit him with something and have him, die somewhere. But obviously, they took him to some place. They took time to torture him. They definitely wanted certain information, passwords, or certain key information that will lead to them, being able to infiltrate the system. And when he could not provide this, obviously then they had to kill him and throw his body somewhere too far away from where his car was found, of course, along with a young lady. So everybody at this moment believes that his murder had something to do with the upcoming elections. There is nobody, not even one single person, thinks that this death was for any other reason other than the elections.
You know, there was a time, Vincent, when the vast majority of Kenyans had confidence in the Electoral Commission, especially under Samuel Kivuitu back in 2002. From what you gather as you interact to Kenyans, do you get the sense that they do have confidence in the ability of the IEBC to deliver a credible election?
In fact, I think a great number of Kenyans do believe that the electoral commissioners themselves are determined to deliver a credible election results, and that they have the systems, but the citizens are not confident about the ability of the Electoral Commission to 100% protect the system from interference from external actors. In fact, many people don't have issues with the electoral commissioners or the election commission per se, but they believe that there's a weakness in the system that could be compromised by someone from outside who may have an interest in manipulating these election results in favor of a particular party. So that confidence is not 100%. Not a lack of confidence in the electoral commissioners, but a lack of confidence in their capacity to fully secure the systems against any crooked person who may want to interfere, may infiltrate the system to manipulate the results.
You know that the U.S. ambassador to Kenya has offered the FBI to help perhaps do the investigation in as far as Mr. Musando's death is concerned. And so did, in fact, the British High Commissioner to Kenya, who also offered the London Scotland Yard. What has the government so far said about that? Because they don't frankly seem to be saying either that those people are welcome or not.
I think there's about two things we can read into this. The government hasn't accepted the offer, and the read into this is that the government is saying, well, we're capable of doing our own investigation. We probably at this stage don't need anybody to help us from outside. But there are others who also may look into this and say perhaps someone within the system, maybe the government, is concerned that the FBI or whoever, Mossad, all those that have offered help, could turn around, could perhaps unearth certain things that may be unpleasant to the authorities around here. But at this point, really, nobody knows why. Perhaps the government is saying we are capable of doing our own investigation, and therefore, if we need help, we'll ask for it, but we don't need it at this moment.
Vincent, you covered the previous election, and obviously you gauge the mood then. When you compare and contrast with what is happening on the ground right now, what is your sense?
I think at the moment, I mean, issues are very similar. I mean, the previous election, the last election, of course, centered so much around the ICC issue. The election campaigns have been very emotive. There are really no hard issues on the campaign trail now. There were no serious issues on the campaign trail then. What you see on the ground is, first, the parties are literally a conglomeration of ethnic groups. There has been a negotiation along ethnic lines to make sure that you can kind of, play around with what they call the tyranny of numbers. There is none of the candidates that has been on the campaign trail that has any serious platform that differentiates them from how they ran the other time or from the other candidate. All they're doing on the campaign trail is, in fact, to insult each other, to play around with the ethnic issues, and of course to discredit each other, whether it is character-wise or their history or where they come from. So I don't see a difference in terms of the issues on the campaign trail. The same characters are on the campaign. They are speaking the same language they spoke last time. For the citizens, I see just even more anxiety, more fear, more concern as to what really will happen if the results, especially if the results of these elections end up favoring one side, that is the government side, especially now that the opposition believes there's a scheme by the government to rig this election.
What about the fact that some people have been talking about how the economy is stupid? You're talking, of course, about shortages, for example, of ugali, maize meal, which is a very basic staple. People have been talking about the possibility of an unga revolution.
Oh yes. The economic issues have been out there. Of course, the blame goes squarely on the government of the day, but not that there's any serious kind of discussions on how this will be resolved. But of course, the government sees this as a disadvantage to them at this particular time to have these food shortages, perhaps high prices of essential commodities. And for some, they feel that a majority of Kenyans may vote for the opposition, mostly because of these issues, because of the food issue, the unga issue. But at the same time, you have to remember that the ethnic vote is very strong. The core supporters of the Jubilee, who are found in Central Province and the Rift Valley Province, will probably, regardless of the issues that are out there, vote for those that they perceive to be their men. And because that's a big issue in this country, where people may vote on hungry stomachs for one of their own. But there is no way you can downplay the fact that the Unga Revolution or the shortage of food and the high prices of some of the foodstuffs may have an impact on the election this time around.
Talking about the ethnic connection, what about the fact that there is a lot of evidence, for example, that the main opposition, NASA, has actually been making inroads in the Rift Valley? We're talking about Bomet. We're talking about Eldoret, the hometown, in fact, of the Deputy President William Ruto. We're talking about Baringo. We're talking about Nakuru. We're even talking about Central Province Meru itself.
Yes, and there's a reason for that. Most of those people in those areas are starting to wonder whether there is a greater benefit, especially looking into the future, to just keep voting for people because they come from their village. Of course, they have seen that in terms of performance, this government hasn't been in power and in some respects has not delivered, according to them, even to their own people. They question whether there is a great benefit from voting for just the people from their own area just because they speak the same language or because they come from the same area. The genius, I think, of the NASA Alliance, the opposition alliance, is that it does bring together people from more communities as compared to how many people seem to be in Jubilee. Of course, Jubilee has people from many other communities than two, but the perception is that it is a party mostly populated by people from two ethnic groups, while NASA seems to have a representation of a multiplicity of ethnic groups from across the nation. And now, of course, people from the Jubilee strongholds are wondering whether perhaps it is in time. Some of them are wondering whether it is in time to let someone else from somewhere else to lead this country, so that as we look at the country into the future, they may feel secure and not isolated one day when someone from the opposition takes this seat, or someone from another ethnic group, so they will not feel isolated as a punishment for having held power for too long. You have to remember, this country has been ruled basically by men from two ethnic groups up to this point, since 1963.
You are talking, of course, about Kikuyu in the Central Province and the Kalenjin in the Rift Valley, correct?
Exactly. And even people from those particular communities, some of them are actually questioning whether this status quo should be maintained, whether it is in time to give someone else or some other people the opportunity to lead this country for the sake of national cohesion, for the sake of the perception that every community in this country has the equal access to power and has the right also to lead this nation. And it's not a preserve of just one or two communities.
Final question, Vincent. What about concerns regarding security? There have been, in fact, allegations that the government is planning to use even the Kenyan Defense Forces to play a role in the upcoming elections.
I've been flying, and particularly from the opposition. Well, today, the government spokesperson, Eric Raithe, denied there being any special use of security personnel for purposes of either intimidating the opposition voters or any other voters. But he did acknowledge that there is training that is ongoing, that there are security personnel that will be posted at the polling stations across the country to help the electoral officials stay safe and conduct the election process without fear. Of course, that might, who knows, might be a trigger for violence. To have security personnel in polling stations for some is not a good indication of a free and fair election, because it does create an element of intimidation. But the government spokesman actually said there will be security personnel around the polling stations. And the question is, will they participate in any way to manipulate the system? The Electoral Commission officials say nobody can infiltrate the system. Their presence does not necessarily mean they're going to interfere with the electoral process.
Thanks, Vincent, on that note, for that interaction, my friend, and that analysis.
It's a pleasure. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Good luck in Nairobi. Now, joining us here in our Washington studio is Anita Regan herself, an independent consultant and energy policy advisor, and a Garrant Kenyan.
Absolutely.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, and happy anniversary.
Thank you so much. Yes, it's been quite a ride for the last at least 17 years.
Yes, but you've done well.
You just got back from Nairobi. How was it, briefly?
As Vincent said, it was cold, but to me it was just like fall. So it was very normal for me because I'm used to Washington weather and the season. So it was good for me. But a lot of people are having colds.
Very interesting. We expected, of course, some people to join you here in the studio. One of them, in fact, was Ali Badawi, a spokesperson for NASA in North America, but mm-hmm. we haven't heard from him. There was also another individual who was supposed to give a voice to Jubilee, and he's called Jeremiah Mbui, a former parliamentary candidate in Meru itself. Yeah. But unfortunately, he did have some family urgent issues to attend to. And we also thought, in fact, we could have, perhaps via remote telephone call, of Senator Moses Wetangula, the man who until recently was the minority leader in the Kenyan Senate, but unfortunately he did not pick the phone. Well, later in the program, of course, we will give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guest. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The US country code is 1. You just came back, of course, from Kenya.
Yes, I did.
Tell us, what was it like?
It was interesting. You saw a lot of very vibrant campaigning going on. Basically every single day, there was protests, there was always something pertaining to the upcoming election. So it was good to find out what is really going on, whether it is the person in the streets or it's on television or friends that you meet. Everybody has an idea of what the upcoming elections are going to be. To tell you the truth, I can't tell you either way what it's going to be like, but my major concern is that they have a peaceful election and what happens on the 9th of August. And I think that is basically where I see Kenyans to be more concerned about what happens on the 9th of election, after the elections, regardless of who wins.
Did you have a chance to attend any of the rallies, for example, political rallies?
No, I didn't.
Why? Why not?
I didn't. First of all, I was working, doing other things. But on top of that, I was just gauging the normal 190. Whether it was in Uber or in a restaurant or on people you meet on the street, your friends. So I was just gauging them at that level. So my parents at home. So it was very interesting in that sense.
You know, a lot of people say that when you talk about politics in Kenya, you're basically talking or invoking ethnicity. Are you telling me that people do not really somehow take seriously or are not concerned about issues that affect them? There is drought in Kenya, for example. There are shortages of, you know, basically staple foods, really. We're talking about ugali. We're told that, for example, when you talk about milk, you really have to be a very rich person to purchase milk, because the last time I checked, it even costs more than a liter of petrol or gasoline in this country.
Yeah.
Is that true?
It's true, but we have to recognize climate change, the effect that it's having on a lot of agriculture in Africa especially. And we're never really responsive to those kind of situations. There is drought in the northern part of Kenya. There's not enough food. And as you said, food is getting expensive because you're not making enough of it, or there's some in certain areas, but it's not been moved. So transportation then becomes also very expensive, because now you're taking food from areas like the Western Province to take it to the north. There's drought. There really is no food in some of those areas. But it does not mean that there is no food security in Kenya. There's plenty of food in Nairobi or in Kenya in general. But it's how do you move it to the areas that are needed?
Now, every family really would like to have unfettered access, at least to milk for their kids, correct?
Yes.
And of course, the last time I checked, the Kenyatta family is reportedly the single, most important player when it comes to the dairy industry.
Yes.
We're talking about
Brookside.
Correct?
Yes.
And people, for example, complaining or perhaps, you know, saying, wait a minute, you happen to be part of this and we can't access milk. This means that we can't perhaps vote for you.
Everybody will have a grievance. If it's not milk, it's going to be bread. If it's not bread, it's going to be fruits and vegetables.
Sugar.
Sugar. It's going to be all sorts of produce and products.
Skumawiki? Any problem with skumawiki?
Yet we only focused on maize meal. So even if you're talking about ugali, it takes much shorter time to actually cook ugali. But we have cassava, we have potatoes, we have other bananas, we have other types of food. So we tend to focus in the one which takes the least time to cook. But are we talking also about the skumawiki that goes with the ugali and the nyama that goes also with the skumawiki and ugali? So it's a lot of issues, whether it is Kenyatta, it is generally how do we ourselves as Kenyans secure our food into the future? This is some of the things that we have to talk about, even farmers. You know, are they getting the right fertilizers? Are they getting the seeds that they want? So it's a much larger, deeper issue on the society and what we are doing, even with our own sort of farmers in Kenya.
Very interesting. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa, and we'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment, so please, don't go away.
And not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 1730 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githu Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's a time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Well, thanks, Shaka. As Kenya prepares for its August 8th presidential election between incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, the latest public opinion polls say the ballot is too close to call. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, who would you like to see become the next president of Kenya and why? Well, before we begin, I'd like to thank all of you for using our social media platforms to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOA Kenya Elections. If you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. Speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Arik Mawikebete, who tweets, if the election will be free, fair, and credible, then the ballot box will definitely reflect the will of the Kenyan people. Absolutely. Well, now to a comment of the week from Facebook fan Chindefu Aubrey Kasunu from Zambia, who writes, African countries should not easily change leaders for the sake of democracy. African presidential terms should be 7 years with a two-term limit. By so doing, within 14 years, every leader would have achieved all their aspirations for the citizens of their country. This means more resources may be used for developmental achievement. Well, with that in mind, let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Augustine Tamba in Monrovia, Liberia, who writes, it has been a remarkable journey of peace in Kenya. We hope that the young people of Kenya will show the world that the country will be free of election violence on August 8th. The Kenyan media should promote peace. And our last Facebook comment comes from David Onserio Monda from Los Angeles, California. He writes, this is a watershed election. It has implications for the whole of the continent. This time around, more has been done to safeguard the results of the election. But the actual voting process on the election day will be the true test. Mobilization of voters from both sides to the voting booth will be key in determining the winner. Very interesting comment and a reminder that we appreciate all of the audience feedback, so please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Interact with our show as it's streaming live. And be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Just sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website. Or you can simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. On the next, Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth review and discussion on the electoral process and results of the presidential elections in Rwanda and Kenya. Election fever in East Africa. On the next, Straight Talk Africa. Well, that's all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and the guests have a lot of social media comments to discuss. Back to you.
Indeed, Ayen, thank you very, very much for sharing your social media reaction with us. In case you're just joining us, today's topic is the upcoming Kenyan presidential elections. Our distinguished guest is Anita Regan, an independent consultant and energy policy advisor. Well, I have to say frankly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa for the first time, Anita.
Thank you for having me, Shaka.
You're most welcome. Yeah. You obviously had some of this social media reaction. Mm-hmm. What about your reaction to the reaction?
The reaction to the reaction. I think everybody is hoping for a peaceful election. And that is what I also hope for the whole of Kenya. And as one of the writers said, or the commentator said, was that what happens in Kenya will affect the whole region, let alone even the whole continent. Mm-hmm. So it is very essential that we do have a peace and fair election. What that means is also another story, because we are actually talking about some of these issues even before they've actually happened. Mm-hmm. So how we go about even accepting the results, whichever candidate it may be, will determine what happens to us in the future. And that is one step forward into building a much better and more peaceful nation.
When you talk to some Kenyans or some friends, say in Kenya and around here, do they share the same view? For example, like you said, that Kenya is not only for Kenyans, mm-hmm. but in fact is for all of us?
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, when you look at the map of Africa, Kenya is like the heart of Africa. It's right there where it's pounding, because it's the one which basically has the port.
The port.
Yes.
The most important probably port around there.
Exactly. Actually. The geopolitical, the most developed one, that the one people can be able to use. And now with the SGR, we're building in the rail that has been built. So it is also going to be connecting the rest of Africa with each other. Mm-hmm. So that will be interesting to see what that kind of future looks like. So we need to look at way beyond 5 or 10 years from now.
One of the social media reaction was that as far as Kenya is concerned, this, in that particular individual's view, is a watershed election in Kenya.
Yes.
Do you agree with that? And if so, why?
It's a watershed election. You have to understand what happened in 2013. Kenya has devolved since then. There's 47 counties. So this is no longer just about two candidates anymore. There's over, 14,500 candidates running in this coming election. Mm-hmm. And we tend to forget that. So we have the governorships, we have the senatorial, we have the members of parliament, we have members of the council, county assembly.
Right.
So there's so many other candidates who are running. So the president is supposed to be representing the Republic of Kenya. It is not one ethnic group over another, and we need to understand that. The governors are also going to be taking a lead of what happens in the various counties. So they will also be taking some of the responsibility in how those particular counties are going to be governed. So let us just not only look at this as a presidential election. Mm-hmm. We are talking about much more than that.
Correct.
So, but nobody's talking about that part. So two people being elected will be president, but then what happens at the county level? People's participation at the county level, and selecting the person they believe will help them develop that particular county with the roads, with the hospitals. We're talking about security, and one of the things that they did talk about was the security that is available. But we don't understand that there's also Al-Shabaab next door. There's been attacks in Lamu. So when you even see the activities of the military, it's because of the much larger issues than just running the elections. Mm. It's also the security of the country and the people who are going to be at the polling stations.
Talking about the different elections, how important really has devolution really been in as far as people are concerned? Because you're talking about governors. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're talking about local government and
exactly.
all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
How important, at least from, you know, from what you have seen or what you have had in interacting with some of your colleagues and what have you, how important is devolution in their view?
Devolution gives everybody an opportunity to participate in the political process, because then if you don't get it from the government, mm-hmm. the central government, mm-hmm. you can get it from your county government. So at least it's giving people options of what they want to have when we call development, when we talk about services. How are these counties going to provide Kenyans the basic services that they need? We're talking about medical, we're talking about education, transportation, security, food security. So there's a lot more issues at stake than just talking about two people. So now, if you're in one county, Shaka, how would you like your city to look like? So this is an opportunity for you to cast a vote on that vision of where you think that particular governor or senator or member of parliament or MCA is going to take you. So that will be where you live. So the larger picture, you're talking about representing the country. Now, that is the president. So he's supposed to be the soul and heart of a country. It's not supposed to be from any ethnic group. It's supposed to represent everybody who's a Kenyan.
It's supposed to be. But of course, you do have a lot of criticisms, for example, that the president seems to be condoning or practicing nepotism. Mm-hmm. And in fact, condoning or perhaps allowing corruption, frankly, to be the rule of the day.
Well, that is true, but that is everywhere. We are seeing that with our current president here in the United States. So nepotism plays a specific role in all politics, even as in business. The question is, if that person is also put there, despite of the fact whether it's the son or the daughter of, are they competent enough to do the job in which they have been given? Nepotism works as far as we want it to work, but Kenyans also have to use the resources which are available in country, whether it is the commissions which are set up to address some of these grievances. Take time, go there, learn what it is that your rights are. Even under the Constitution, you can complain. You can actually submit your concerns, and hopefully somebody's going to hear you.
You know, you sort of compared nepotism in Kenya with the apparent nepotism here in the United States.
Yeah.
What about the fact that someone will tell you that here in the United States, you really have what you call a society of laws.
Exactly.
Not a society of
exactly.
men or women.
Exactly.
And you do have respect for rule of law.
That is it.
And you also have very strong institutions
and
that run the country.
And that is what I'm talking about. There are institutions in Kenya, whether it's the Ombudsman's Office, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, there are places where you can actually go and complain.
But how strong are they? I mean, let's face it, when you talk about the Kenyan judiciary, until recently, someone will tell you that, in fact, if you have a suit, somebody has accused you and all that kind of stuff, you don't really have to worry about going to court, because guess what? You could actually buy a judge.
And that is the concerns we have. We do not trust in our own institutions enough for it to work the way it's supposed to. So at the end of the day, whether it's the IABC, we're talking about them holding the elections, we don't even trust them to be able to do that. So when do we begin to trust the institutions that are in place to address a lot of these issues? Mm. They are there, but we don't allow them to work. Because as you know very well, even the Anti-Corruption Commission, how many cases have they actually prosecuted? You hear of cases, and then all of a sudden it's disappeared. So on top of that, we have to allow the process to take place. We have to allow these things to actually function for us to be able to trust it. But we don't trust it because we never see the results that we hope to be the results that we want. So we then start doubting. We doubt a lot of things that we have in Kenya.
Now, Anita, for a very long time, Kenya, like most African countries, had what would be characterized as an imperial presidency, literally controlling everything, perhaps including the oxygen, in fact, that you might need to access in order to remain alive. What sort of changes really have occurred since then? Because there are a lot of people who say, yes, you do have what appears to be decentralization on paper, but in fact, in practice, nothing much has changed.
No, it
because they talk about, for example, the Independent Electoral Boundaries Commission. But to what extent, frankly, is it independent beyond the name?
It's because we don't trust it enough to do what it's supposed to do. We already question the existence of what independence actually means. It means that when they say that this is what they are doing, this is what is going to happen. But we don't even trust that. And it being with this current government, people actually assume it's with the government, but it's actually supposed to be with either side. It's not supposed to be NASA or Jubilee. It is for the Republic of Kenya. It is there for, as a government agency, like every other agency. And we should allow it to work.
We'll come back to that later, because I will tell you, for example, how some civil servants, including public officials like cabinet secretaries, are actually been campaigning with the Jubilee Party.
Yeah.
Because it's obviously the government, and frankly, people say there doesn't seem to be much difference between the ruling party and the state.
That's right.
A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. Participate in our discussion. Please call us at 202-619-3111. This country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gizi-Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Let me come back to you, Anita. I had said that I would come to the issue of, I would say, probably not allegations, because in fact I have seen some of the evidence myself. The law states, frankly, at least according to the Kenyan constitution, from what I know, that public officials are not supposed to be campaigning with a political party. A political party that happens to be in charge of the state should not be using state resources for political purposes.
Yes.
So what do you say to that? Because we've been seeing really videos all over the place. Many cabinet secretaries, in fact, campaigning, really.
Well, we also have what you call the Hatch Act here, you know, about political activities here. And it depends on the role they're going to go, whether it's an individual or whether it's part of the politics that they have to be in certain campaigns. But normally you're not supposed to have the cabinet secretaries campaigning. That is a fact, unless they're there by their own individual capacity. And if they are going to be there as part of the party, then they need to declare that.
So how come, for example, the IEBC is not calling them out?
That is a question that we need to ask the IEBC, because a lot of these laws are actually, as you said, it's in the books, it's in the constitution. But who enforces them? And that is part of the problems that they're also having in Kenya, is who enforces half of the laws which are there? Nobody does. And then when people come in, we call them out, but then what happens after that? But normally they're not supposed to, actually. Even here, you're not supposed to. That's part of the political activities. It's supposed to separate that out based on their official position.
Anita, excuse me, let's go to the telephone lines, the telephone callers, the lifeline of the show, as a matter of fact. Good evening, Okolo from Nigeria. You are most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Okolo, can you hear me? I'm afraid I cannot hear Okolo. What would you like to see happening in your country? Because your country has incredible resources, really. We're talking about both natural and human resources, and yet it has not yet, frankly, attained even perhaps half of its capacity, really, potential.
You're absolutely right. We have not reached our full capacity. That doesn't mean that the opportunities are not there. The opportunities are there, especially amongst the youth. They come up with some amazing things, especially with development of some apps, you know, regarding one thing or another.
M-Pesa
is one of those things. But the problem is that with the environment that we live in right now, will that be able to absorb some of these new innovative ideas towards the future? Because these is a people, actually, most of the youth are the people who are going to resolve a lot of the problems we are currently having right now. Mm-hmm. But they also need to be given that platform, you know, short of just being told, we'll get you a job, but what kind of a job? Is that a job that they can actually do or the job they really like to do? Mm-hmm. But we need to create those environments and opportunities for them to do that.
You know, I have been watching and monitoring campaigning in Kenya. It looks, you know, incredible.
Yes, it does.
Have you been impressed by the manner in which they're going around about campaigning?
I am, absolutely. It's very vibrant. Everybody's really into it in their heart and soul. Everybody's really participating in it in one form or another. How they actually even presented the manifesto, that was something very interesting to see. And so even I was even amazed. I was on the computer and I wasn't really watching television and I had the music. And I was like, this is really nice music to represent what is either party's position on any given issue. And they did it very well. And I was really impressed by that. This is one thing about the youth participating. Although some of the youth have complained that either NASA or Jubilee have not really listened to what their grievances are, what their issues are. So, but they will use them when it comes to certain aspects of their campaign. And then thereafter, they're left on their own. So they are also aggrieved to some point, and they need also to be able to participate. But they are really into it, and I'm really impressed by that, because the youth are much more involved than some of the youth here. We found with Bernie Sanders supporters, for example.
Very interesting. What do you think about the perpetual opposition candidate, presidential candidate, Raila Amolo Odinga?
I do not know him personally, but I have seen him through the years as to what he's capable of doing. And I think he's got a lot of potential to present his position on any given issue, just like every other candidate. And it's up to him then to decide to take that forth into the future. But now, depending on what happens on the 9th, you know, everybody has that opportunity. But he's got the capacity and capability of doing what he needs to do as a leader, just like everybody else does.
What do most Kenyans think about him? Because let's face it, reports say that he has lost several elections.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, the fact is, by the way, that he did not lose the 2007 election. There is incontrovertible evidence. In fact, I personally was even told by the then chairman of the Electoral Commission of Kenya, Samuel Kivuitu. He told me we were having actually lunch at Nairobi's Intercontinental Hotel. He told me that Raila did not lose that election.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, so was the international community, because it accepted the fact that's how you ended up with a grand collision. We're talking about the 2007 election.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he ended up being a prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
You call it Nsumugati or something of that sort.
Mukate, yeah.
And then, of course, I also have a lot of evidence that no one, either Uhuru Kenyatta or Raila Odinga, could actually have won the 2013 presidential election in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
But Uhuru Kenyatta won. What is it that, you know, people somehow think about Raila Odinga, and looks like their powers that be would not like to have a Raila presidency?
I do not know whether that is a position that I will take when observing these issues. And if anybody is for this side or that side, you'll automatically come up and say, this is a person who should have won, or this is a person who should have won. I wish Hillary won, but she did not win. But there is a process in place. Whether we agree with it or not, it goes through that process. The outcome is what it is. We may not agree with it, and this is what I hope also for August 8th. We may not always agree with how everything works, but we just need to accept it for what it is and do a much better job the next time around. And that is what, with everything that the IABC has put in place, maybe it will be able to address some of these issues that we're talking about, so that we do not find ourselves asking ourselves, this person should have done this or this person should have won. Mm. So we do not find ourselves asking ourselves these kind of questions.
Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Ralph from Liberia. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
Yeah, my name is Ralph Flandier. I am a new joy from Liberia. I want to say hi to Anita in studio with you this hour. And then I want to say hi to her. And I want to say to the people of Kenya, as they go closer to their presidential election, I wish them a farewell. I wish them a success. As we all know that Kenya is the heartbeat of Africa, and we as Africans, we must behave as Africans. We are peace loving and caring people, and then that of the people of Kenya. So I wish them a success in the electoral process. As they go to the electoral process, and also our own country, Liberia, is also undergoing their own electoral process as well.
Thank you.
I wish the Kenyan a success. And then I also thank the studio there. Also, thank you for your talk show this hour. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ralph. There have been, of course, allegations that, or accusations that, again, that Raila, in fact, is a tribalist, that he invokes tribalism. And yet, let's face it, back in 2002, this Luo man decided, in fact, to support, to endorse Emilio Mwai Kibaki, a Kikuyu from Nyeri, to be president. That doesn't look like a tribalist, does it?
No.
His father, in fact, much earlier, around 1961, was given the opportunity by a colonial governor to be the first prime minister. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, our leaders are in Kapenguria. And that is how Jomo Kenyatta eventually became the prime minister.
Well, you know, Honorable Odinga, he knows the politics. And we may not always agree with the person on the other side, but we need to call it for what it is. Just like when we're trying to pass in a bill or anything like that, I may not specifically like your position on any given issue, but I will support you in the passage of that. So as long as you get 80% of what you want, the other 20%, you can always play around with.
Who do you think is likely to win? 10 seconds.
The people of Kenya.
The people of Kenya.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Yes.
There could well be change in Kenya.
Yes.
On that note, thanks to our distinguished guest, Anita Regan. And thanks, of course, to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners. We thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning is Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Kenya. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.